The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
Surely we're not going to be playing these sort of over-the-top love songs today. I mean, it's bad enough as it is out there with everybody rushing around buying roses and cards. No. We're all about love on this show, but not the sort that cries itself to sleep at night because you didn't get a Valentine's card. Okay, I'm sorry, Reed. Look, let's start this show again, okay? Let's go back to the beginning. One, two, three. Here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio, and today, yes, we are talking love and we're talking romance. We have to, it's Valentine's Day, right? We have the author Dorothy Lintel Greco coming on in the next segment to discuss marriage in midlife. That's right, midlife, with all its joys, surprises, and unexpected blessings. Divine Mercy is at the top of the hour, and it's your time to have your intentions prayed for. Text me now on 251-928-2111. The lines are open for your intentions. 251-928-2111. The final segment, we are back to romance, and this time we are discussing the world of dating, and we speak to a dating agency with a difference. It's Catholic. Mariette Runtoll joins us from Catholic Match to dispel the myths about internet dating. So how does that sound? Pretty good, I would say. So let's saddle up and head for that radio gold as we get this show on the road. And that was Reed just firing that Love Hurts record into the ether. Listen, this is not about sort of maudlin love songs. Everybody's had their heart broken. Just speak to anybody who's operated in a heart surgery. Everybody gets their hearts broken. It's just part of life. But we're here to talk about other aspects of love. So we're going to be looking at two ends of the spectrum. One, the beginning, romance, dating agencies. Now, I don't know about you. Dating agencies, when I was younger, had a certain sense to them, a certain feel to them that everybody laughed about and nobody wanted to admit that they ever went near. I remember once shopping in a central London supermarket. I kid you not. And I think I was at the frozen peas section when a young woman came up to me, very glamorously dressed, and said, "Would you be interested in joining a dating agency?" And I said, "You've got to," I looked around. I thought I was on candid camera. I said, "You've got to be joking me." No, she said, "No, we've started a dating agency." It was in Covent Garden. "We started a dating agency just across the road, and we are in short of young men. Would you like to join?" I said, "You can't be serious." She said, "I am." I said, "Impossible." Anyway, that was my only flirtation with dating agencies. Needless to say, I didn't join. I thought she wasn't joking. I thought she was joking until I went and saw her approach another man in the same store and ask him the exact same question. So she must have been serious. But anyway, we're going to be talking about that aspect of marriage and dating, where people are looking for their lifetime spouse. And we're looking at it through the lens of Catholic faith and Catholic doctrine, which means that it's not just somebody to go to the movies with, it's somebody to get married to and have children with. That's what it's all about in the Catholic sphere. So Catholic Match is coming up later. And if you've had any experiences dating, good, bad, or ugly, then of course we'd love to hear from you on 888-928-0881. Or maybe you'd like some advice on dating, then that final segment is for you, Reed. I mean, for you, the audience. 888-928-0881. But before that, we are talking that other aspect of marriage, which is or love and romance, which is marriage and keeping a marriage, sustaining a marriage over the years. Anybody who's been married over the years knows that, as Fulton Sheen said, it takes three to get married. That's right. Each of the spouses, a man and a woman for life, and also the good Lord to come into that. The Holy Spirit to animate both hearts so that true charity reigns in a Christian marriage. Now, I dread to ask this, but Reed, did you get any Valentine's cards today?
I haven't yet. It's pretty early still, Kevin. You know, Todd was talking about how his wife kind of ambushed him earlier this morning and presented him with his gifts and everything. He wasn't quite ready for it, so still pretty early, still plenty of time to get all that figured out, but not yet. I did want to mention, while we're doing the Valentine's theme today, we have a Valentine's theme call song, like the call alert. I'll go ahead and play it for you.
Why is my heart sinking?
This shouldn't be too bad.
I just called to say I love you.
That's one of your better ones, Reed. That's not too bad. I like that. So listen, if you want to call in. Now, the other thing is, like, Mike is happily married. I'm married.
Yes.
Michelle, we believe, is married. Reed is not married. And I wondered if there was any kind person out there, any listener who could, first of all, give Reed a little bit of advice, you know, maybe an older woman who's been through that can give Reed a little bit of dating advice. Or, and I know I haven't checked this out with Reed, it might embarrass him, but listen, if you have a daughter, a granddaughter, a niece, a sister who you think would be just right for Reed, you know? Just right for him. Could be that special one. You never know. Let the magic perform. Well, why don't you call in with somebody for Reed, and maybe we can do a bit of matchmaking on air. Here on Valentine's, we could make radio history and find Reed. Future spouse. 888-928-0881 if you're feeling strong. Look, you can even anonymize your voice if you want, okay? You don't have to give your name or your coordinates. We've had a few of those callers as well who refused to give their location. That's okay. We don't mind, you know, as long as you're calling from planet Earth and they can meet Reed for a Saturday night date at some point, that would be absolutely fine. Now, Reed, I hope you don't mind me putting that out there, but I just can't bear to think of you crying into your pillow each night because the Valentine's card didn't arrive.
Oh, well, you know, sometimes you can get some different things. You never know what you're going to get when you have callers calling in, I guess is what I mean. But, you know, we'll hope for the best, and we'll see what options are presented to me.
Yeah, but, you know, Valentine's Day, let's be honest, doesn't really exist, folks. It happens in July. July 6th, to be honest, I think, is the official St. Valentine's Day feast. Up until the change of the calendar in the Catholic Church in 1969, it was St. Valentine's Day, but that all changed with the new calendar. So today, if you went to Mass, as I did this morning, it's St. Cyril and Methodius, who are the patrons, the secondary patrons of Europe. So we were praying for them, and there wasn't a hint or a word from the priest celebrating Mass about St. Valentine's Day. It was as if it did not happen. It wasn't in existence, which according to liturgical calendars is true. So if there's a Catholic husband or wife listening to that thinking, oh no, I forgot to get the card, I forgot to get the present, I forgot to wish them a happy Valentine's Day, don't worry. What you say when the other spouse comes home slightly annoyed is say, but you know the liturgical feast is St. Cyril and Methodius, and we really celebrate St. Valentine's Day on July 6th, and I will be celebrating it with you then.
That sounds like a great idea to tell your spouse, Kevin.
It's a good excuse, right? And also, you know what, Reed? Chocolates, flowers, roses are a lot cheaper in July.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's also easier to get a table. Have you ever tried getting a table at a restaurant on Valentine's Day?
Oh, my gosh. You have to call... probably the day before, I would imagine.
You wouldn't even be allowed to wait tables on Valentine's Day. It's that busy. Do you know what I mean? It's just out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, the other thing which is always a fail-safe is to have in your locker the expression, I don't need a particular day to tell you that I love you.
Then
sorry,
you just point to
I'm
that
not speaking
when they...
to you, Reed. I'm speaking to the mythical spouse who's annoyed that that you aren't celebrating it. And it's true, you know, that Valentine's Day is a little bit overrated, I think, a little bit over the top. And the thing I found is that the people who celebrate Valentine's Day the most are the people who are not Christians, the people who don't believe in anything, but they want to mark Valentine's Day. They turn it into a sort of secular fest for all things romantic. But anybody who's lived in the real world knows that romance doesn't really last. Love lasts, commitment lasts, and all of that good stuff. But romance, I mean, you can still be romantic. Don't get me wrong. You'd be married for a long time and still be romantic. That's not it. But that initial heart-stopping romance of the early days, I mean, if you still felt like that after 20 or 30 years of marriage, Reed, I think you'd need to go and see a heart specialist. I really do. But listen, Reed is sitting here on his own. He's free tonight. Who's out there? 888-928-0881. Reed, what would be your sort of ideal woman?
Well, you're kind of putting me on the spot here, Kevin.
I am. I know. Okay, well, let me
I'll
help.
I'll start
you.
With
okay.
Catholic.
Yes, let's start with the basics, right? So she's alive. she's got a pulse. She's got no major health issues, maybe, to begin with.
I'm 25, so I hate to be exclusive, but I would probably set the cutoff at like 45.
75?
Or,
oh,
yeah.
45.
Yeah,
45.
Even, yeah, yeah.
45.
I mean,
45, that's quite high, Reed. I mean, seriously, you go all the way up to 45?
I mean, we'll see what we have going on here.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, love doesn't know any age or whatever that sort of cliche is, but absolutely. Well, 45. Listen, if you're 46, we can still probably work it into the mix, right? If you're 56, might be a harder sell for Reed. 66, I'll have to do some talking to him. And 76, we'll have to threaten redundancy. But it's still possible. Reed is available tonight. He will go out with anyone who will take him. And so what would be your date? Where would you take this mythic woman? Reed, what would be your kind of romantic date? Would you take her to a restaurant, to the movies, a nice walk? Where would you take her?
Probably more of the nice walk type of thing. You know, like you were saying, the restaurant is going to be pretty overblown. You're going to be spending all your time waiting to be seated. It's going to be loud. It's going to be crowded. So I guess my idea would be in Fairhope here, you know, there's a very beautiful harbor. Very beautiful park there. We would go walk. Actually, when I had my high school prom, that's where my date and I went and spent the evening, and then and took pictures and everything. So, seems like that would be a good idea. Again, if we can find a taker.
I'm sure we can, Reed. I mean, you know, I mean, you're a young man with a great future ahead of yourself, and you've become a little bit of a celebrity thanks to this radio station. So, I mean, there's probably a lot of women who are a little bit shy of you, Reed. That's what I'm picking up. You know, they probably would like to date Reed, but you know, there's one thing about dating the man, and you know, when you've lived with the fantasy for so long.
Yep. There's not much mystique to me. If you want to come up and talk to me, go ahead.
Don't say that, Reed. You're putting them off. No, there's lots of mystique to Reed. This well-honed radio persona that you hear of, this humble young man, you know, really, he's a very, very impressive figure.
He's the ideal candidate, you know, for
Thank
love.
Thank you, Mike. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
But we gotta ask you, you know, you're asking about us. What did you do for your lovely wife? Do you have any plans? I mean, it's what... 2 o'clock there, right?
There,
yes, 2 o'clock there. So what are you planning on doing after this show? Or did you do something for her already?
I know there's nobody listening in the UK, so I can say this. I don't think we did anything. In fact, I forgot that it was Valentine's.
No, you and Todd fell in the same boat. What's up with that?
Let me explain.
Ambushed, Kevin?
Let me explain. Until I looked at my show notes an hour ago, I'd forgotten all about it. Now, let me explain. When we got married, or even before we were married, I remember asking my wife about Valentine's Day, and she said, I don't bother with that. I don't celebrate that because she's very liturgically minded, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, great. That means I don't have to buy roses and chocolates at overpriced round Valentine's Day. Great. And to be honest, we've never really celebrated it. And I think what I'd be more interested in celebrating is, I mean, I think one's anniversary is a very important day, but it's thinking not so much the flowers and the chocolates and the roses, but that sense of that God has a plan for you and that special person in your life, your spouse. And it's a path to holiness. Remember, we were talking about Emperor Charles and his wife, Zita, Princess Zita. Mm-hmm. And one, they turned to each other on their wedding day and they said, now we've got to get each other to heaven. And I just wonder how many people today in their dating, in their whatever, I'm sure there are some, who will be thinking, this is part of God's plan to get me and this other person to heaven. And I think that that's a very, very interesting way of looking at it, as opposed to, did you get the card today? Did you get the chocolates? But I'm not opposed to it. But Mike, it sounds like your home has been turned into a sort of Valentine fest for the whole of Southern Alabama.
I did get some, my particular home. Yeah, I mean, I did get, my wife and kids chocolate and got my wife some wine that she likes, but nothing too crazy. We'll probably, I'm sure Donnie will cook something tonight, but nothing too over the top. I guess we're more just traditionalists in that sense. But so you said that your wife, mm-hmm. You said that your wife is liturgical. So maybe you said that Valentine's Day is celebrated July 16th, I guess. I mean July 6th. So maybe you'll do something for her then. The actual.
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you a story, Mike. When we got married, we had our honeymoon. I think it was in Scotland. Well, I know it was in Scotland. I was there. And then in the autumn, we went to Rome. We went to see Pope John Paul II. And believe it or not, in our first morning in Rome, we got up and we were staying at a place run by nuns, I think. And in the breakfast area, they had the television on. And the nun who knew my wife said, you've got to go to St. Peter's Square now, immediately. And we were like, I was like, well, we haven't even had a cup of coffee. What's the rush? And she said, Pope John Paul II is beatifying the first married couple ever in the history of the church at this moment in St. Peter's Square. And you've got to get there. And it was Blessed Luigi and Maria Beltram Quadracci of Rome who were being beatified there. And subsequent to that, we went to a mass in St. John Lateran, where we met the children of the new Beati. Can you believe that? Two of the sons were priests, and they celebrated a mass there with John Paul II. And it was a very beautiful and very moving and very slightly mysterious event. It was just one of those life things where suddenly I was in St. Peter's Square at the beatification. We raced there, got there in time, just as the Pope declared this married couple Beati, first in church history. He said something very beautiful that day, which I went and looked up afterwards. And he said, daily communion was at the center to which was added filial devotion to the Virgin Mary, invoked by praying the rosary every night. So that was their key, not only to holiness, but also probably to married bliss. So if anybody's listening, get your rosary beads out. Join us for the Divine Mercy at the top of the hour. Oh, we have a caller. Well, whoever you are, I hope you've got good news for Reed, because his heart is a little bit fragile. Who have we got on the line?
I'm not sure yet, Kevin. I haven't spoken to them. Let me go ahead and put you through. Hopefully they'll be.
Hold fire, Reed. Don't get too excited. Caller, you're through to the Turley Frequency.
Oh, hey, Kevin. How are you doing today? Happy Valentine's Day to you and Mr. Reed over there.
Hello, Doris. Good to hear your voice again.
Oh, it's so good to see you. Hey, listen to you. Oh, my goodness. It's just a wonderful day. Listen, I want to talk with Reed. I have somebody for him. Oh, she would be perfect. My niece, Nicole, she's just a wonderful sweetheart. She's just wonderful. Nicole, Pam, Rosaggio. She's Italian, and oh my goodness, she would just be absolutely perfect for me. She is 7'3", just absolutely beautiful, wonderful basketball player.
Reed, did you hear that? I mean, Doris, did you say 7'3"?
No. Yes, I did. 7'3", just a wonderful basketball player. She played center for her team coming out of college. Oh, my goodness, she's so wonderful. They call, her middle name is Pam. They call everybody calls her Pam the Spam because she was like, you know, get that junk out of there. She would block shots. She blocked 2,000 shots her senior year. Oh, she's just wonderful. She loves to eat. She loves to just, you know, watch TV. And I would love to set Mr. Reed up with her.
Sounds perfect. What do you think, Reed?
That sounds great. You know, I like basketball. That give us something to talk about.
Yeah, and you like eating like television.
Yep.
I think, Doris, you might be on to something. But listen, Doris, I mean, it's you know, at this stage where love is such a delicate flower, it might be better if you were just off air maybe to speak to Reed and pass the details so that Reed and Pam the Spam can get together and, you know, maybe throw some hoops.
Oh, I absolutely would. They would just make the perfect couple. I can see y'all now, and that just with your cute little cheeks, and I could just eat them up with a tiny little spoon, and then her long, slender brown hair. Oh, y'all would just be so gorgeous. Can I give your producer her number?
Yeah, just hang on the line, Doris. Just we're going to have to go for a break, and thank you very much for that call. There you go.
Oh,
stay on with us, Doris.
Right now.
Doris, you stay on the line, and
we'll take you off the radio, and yeah, we'll get all that figured out.
I can't wait. Oh, y'all going to just make the perfect couple. I can see wedding bells right now. Oh, my goodness. Oh, Pam the Spam and Reed Hodges. Oh.
Okay, listen. There you go. You see, this show is a social service. When we come back, we're going to be discussing midlife crisis and marriage. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency.
And carriage, this I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
Welcome back to the Turley Frequency, here live and exclusive on Archangel. And today is a day when love is the talk of the moment, but more love and romance than probably a lot less about marriage. But as the song says, love and marriage go together as a horse and carriage. But what about when that horse has been trotting along for a long time and the road is going uphill? And what about marriage in the midlife crisis, or is that the midlife opportunity? Well, meet Dorothy Little Greco, who is a writer and a photojournalist. For over 25 years, Dorothy and her husband have been leading marriage workshops and retreats, speaking at national conferences, and generally helping couples create and sustain healthy marriages. She is the author of Marriage in the Middle, Embracing Midlife Surprises, Challenges and Joys, published by InterVarsity Press. And Dorothy joins me down the line from her home just outside Boston. Dorothy, you're very welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Thank you for having me, and that was a great intro. I appreciate that.
So, Dorothy, am I the only one that tends to think, being middle-aged and being married for many decades, am I the only one that gets a little less excited about Valentine's Day every year?
Well, my husband and I had a conversation last night, and he said, are you going to be honest about what Valentine's Day has been like for us? So we have characteristically had fights on Valentine's Day because we have such different expectations about what the day is. So that's one component of why Valentine's Day can be fraught with problems. But it also can be, you know, if you've been married for 30, 40 years, it feels like, okay, do I really need to give another card? Do flowers really matter? And it can feel a little beside the point, right? I don't know what the experience is like for you, but it does sometimes get a little bit difficult to get excited about this one day.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, also, I don't know, Dorothy, there's so much manipulation, especially around people's emotions these days, not just romantic emotions, but all sorts of emotions through media, through social media and what have you, that I tend to think, I mean, this morning I was out walking around and I saw a man in a supermarket desperately looking for Valentine's cards and flowers. And I felt sorry for him. You know, he's a middle-aged man. He'd obviously forgotten all about it. And there he was, and the shop assistants were trying to help him and everything. And I thought, you know, come on. But listen, let's go to your book, Marriage in the Middle, Embracing Midlife Surprises, Challenges and Joys, published by InterVarsity Press. Give us the some of our audience won't have read it, Dorothy. So just give us the basic thesis of what you set out in those pages.
Yeah. So during this time of life, which is a very real thing, you know, as I write in the book, it's midlife is not chronologically correct, right? Because few of us live to into our hundreds, but there's something that's really important that's happening during this time. There are a lot of things that are shifting, a lot of changes that are going on in our lives. We're facing the limits of our powerlessness. You know, if we have children, our children are often leaving this time. Our parents, if they're still alive, are often in great deal of need of support and help navigating the end of their lives. So we're pulled in two different directions. We may be facing our own health crises or, you know, just the natural aspects of aging that sometimes can feel very disappointing and surprising. And all of this is coalescing at the same time. And we have to figure out what does it look like to continue to love each other, to continue to sacrifice for each other, to continue to really sow into our marriage while we're being pulled in so many different directions.
That's really interesting, Dorothy, because I mean, it's always been the case, and I think it's probably been exaggerated even more in the last since the Second World War, but the sort of obsession with youth and romance, which is nothing new, but there's an obsession with that, which tends to think, and when you're young, I was guilty of this, you tend to think that people in midlife or older, like, this is not their arena. Do you know, this is not something they should even be interested in. Is that one of the sort of misconceptions that we've all imbibed, that somehow midlife is not a time for true love and romance?
I think so. I mean, I don't know what it's like in Ireland, but certainly here in the United States, we worship youth. You know, anybody over the age of 30 in terms of a woman, you know, she's old. But the reality is, and how long have you been married?
21 years.
Yeah, so you know, right, that the depth and the richness of staying with someone, of working out conflicts, of learning how to love each other well, it makes your marriage richer and deeper and more fulfilling as you stay together and as you continue to press in. So it certainly looks different than it did, you know, for my husband and I when we got married. But I would say that it's much better now. We love each other better. We're more patient with each other. We understand each other better. So for us, and I think for many couples, like the marriage, the payoff increases the longer we stay in it, provided that we keep doing our work.
I couldn't agree with you more, Dorothy, and you put it very beautifully, if I may say, that is true. And I think it's one of the secrets that nobody seems to tell you when you're starting out on this path.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's true. And even, you know, the notion of that you stop having sex like when you get older. I just think, no, that's not true. It gets richer and deeper. And the more you know each other, the better your sex life is. So it's not that things trail off. They deepen. They get richer. They get more fulfilling. But again, you know, there is a way that we have to stay in the game. We can't check out and we can't just decide that we're going to coast.
That's right. And I think as well, there's something about a familiarity with people, you know, a sort of a great, I mean, you know, in the Christian understanding, you know, man and woman, they become like one body. And it's that, you know, your spouse is your other half. Do you know what I mean? It's like you kind of, there's almost like ESP, you know exactly what they're thinking for good or ill sometimes, you know, and they know exactly what you're thinking. And it's a kind of an interesting journey. And it's probably the most unique journey you will ever make in your life, you know, if you let it.
Yes, it is. And I think using the word journey is perfect because it isn't, there's not a destination that any of us know what it's going to be when we start, right? It's a very organic thing. It takes a lot of twists and turns that few of us could ever expect or anticipate, and some, you know, we don't want to happen. But being on a journey together with a clear sense of who are we, you know, what are we about? You know, for me, it's a faith-based marriage. So having Jesus be the one who draws us together, who empowers us to love, and really who gives us a purpose. You know, what is it? How is it that our marriage is uniquely poised to serve the people around us? That really allows us to move forward on this journey in a way that's purposeful and intentional, and can really add a layer of just, I think, beauty to what a marriage can be when we're looking outwards and figuring out what does it mean to serve people around us. And sometimes that's just our family members. You know, we are in seasons when all we can do is just serve the people in our immediate family. But other times, and midlife, I think, can be one of those times when our parenting, what's required of us as parents is often not as intense, when we can begin to look out and to say, okay, who can I serve? Who in this community needs to hear my story? And that gives us, I think, a great sense of purpose.
Yes, and I mean, you know, you're obviously on a Christian radio station, a Catholic radio station, and I said at the top of the show, and I think I said it earlier in the week as well in another context, that I don't know if you've heard of Fulton Sheen, the great Catholic radio personality in the 1950s and 60s, and he wrote a very interesting book about marriage, and it was called Three to Get Married, and it was essentially the same thesis that you were pushing there, Dorothy, which is that in a Christian marriage, there are two spouses, and I guess a triune God, one Holy Spirit that comes into that. And that's the key component. And I remember when I was much younger, I was going to something. I forget what it was. It was late night. It was traveling. And there were people, volunteers, helping travelers. And there was a couple there who were elderly couple helping. And I remember the young man I was with was not a Christian. And he started to ask this couple how they had managed to stay together so long. And I remember the older man very wisely just looked at him and said, it takes three to get married. And my younger friend didn't understand what he was talking about, but I knew exactly what he meant. And I think that's more or less what you're saying as well, that it certainly helps. It won't make it any less difficult. But without the Holy Spirit, without our Lord in center of one's marriage, I mean, it is a bit of an uphill task. I mean, I know I was joking about the horse and carriage, but human nature being what it is.
I agree with you. And, you know, I often go to 1 Corinthians 13, which so often is read at marriages. But of course, you know, Paul wasn't writing specifically to married couples, and he wasn't married himself. But if we look at the nature of love, it's really profound. And I think first to read through that section, knowing that this is how God loves us, right? That's the way he would describe his love for us. But then for us to be able to read that and to say, well, how am I really doing? How am I loving my spouse? Am I being sacrificial? Am I keeping a record of wrong? Am I believing the best about this person? It really sort of pulls me back into the centrality of what I want my marriage to be. And then, you know, John 15, right, staying connected to the vine. If I'm not connected to God, if I'm not receiving his love, then I really don't have a whole lot to give away.
That's absolutely right. There's because romantic love will burn out, right? I mean, the kind of stuff you see in the movies. I mean, it's great for an hour and a half on the movies, but it doesn't exactly. You're reminding me, Dorothy, of a film I saw of a 20th century Catholic saint who was talking to a group of lay people, and he called one of the women forward, and he asked her what her name was, and then he asked what her husband's name was, and she pointed to him in the audience and said, "He's Joe or Frank or whatever it was, and he's over there."
Yeah.
And he said to her, "Your path to holiness is called Frank." And he looked over at Frank and said, "Frank, your path to holiness," and whatever the lady's name was. And that's an interesting idea, that we are given spouses, that we just don't find them on a dating app, that maybe from a Christian perspective, there's a mysterious way in which God has ordained this marriage from all eternity for a purpose. And that purpose is to get each of the spouses to heaven.
Yes, and to teach us how to love, right? Because if the greatest commandment is learning how to love God with all of who we are and then loving our neighbor as ourself, well, our spouse is our closest and most enduring neighbor. So I really do take that seriously, that what God wants for us is to learn how to love him and then to take that love and to give it to the people who are closest to us. And that's not an easy thing. You know, human nature is not, at least my human nature, I don't know about yours, but I am selfish, I am opinionated, I am strong-willed, and it takes sort of a daily choice for me to hand over those things to the Lord and say, now give me back love, because if I don't love my husband well, if I don't love my sons well, if I don't love my aging mother well, then really I am just a clanging a gong and I'm making noise and I should just shut up.
Well, you're listening to the voice of Dorothy Liddell Greco, who is definitely not a gonging gong. And she is the author of Marriage in the Middle, Embracing Midlife Surprises, Challenges and Joys. When we come back, I'm going to be asking Dorothy about some of the work she's done with midlife couples and also some of the problems that she's helped solve for married couples. So stay tuned to us here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.
You think you've lost your love? Well, I saw her yesterday. It's you she's thinking of, and she told me what to say. She said she loved you, and you know that can't be bad. I just called to say I love you. I just called how much I care.
Welcome back to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm in conversation with Dorothy Liddell Greco, who is the author of Marriage in the Middle, Embracing Midlife Surprises, Challenges and Joys, published by InterVersity Press. And if you have any questions or comments that you'd like to direct to Dorothy, then feel free to get in touch. You can text me and I'll ask the questions on 251-928-2111, or you can speak directly to Dorothy on 888-928-0881. Dorothy, we've all come across people who in midlife have decided that they made a terrible mistake in their youth. They run off with somebody else often who's going to make them happy, and they've finally found themselves and they reinvent themselves in that way. And with varying degrees of success or tragedy, depending on the circumstance. I mean, this story is as old as the hills. And in your work with married couples, you must have dealt with couples who are at that crisis point, you could say a delusional point almost, where people assume that just by changing spouses, they will somehow find the happiness that has eluded them all their lives. How do you go about challenging those delusions and try to find the truth of the situation?
Yes, I think that statistically, midlife, particularly like around 50, which is when, again, if you have kids, they tend to move out, that is the highest divorce rate. But I also do want to add, I always want to dispel this myth that the divorce rate is not 50%. It has never been 50%. It's much, much lower for people of faith. So the notion that, you know, you only have a 50-50 chance is not true. And I want to make sure that people know that. I think during this time period, we face many, many, many challenges, right? There's the health challenges of aging, menopause, perimenopause that really impact women's bodies. And men go through andropause, which is often not talked about, and that affects them. There's all the things that have built up during the course of your marriage that maybe you haven't really processed. Maybe you hoped that your spouse would change. And then, you know, 20 years in, you realize, oh, my gosh, I might be living with this bad habit for the rest of my life, and how do I feel about that? So if we don't really get in there and have the kind of conversations where we're talking about, you know, this has really been hard for me, or this has been very disappointing for me, then the things build up, and the disappointments become resentment, and the resentment becomes despair or disgust. So the notion of, which I think you Catholics do beautifully, you know, regular confession, being able to say, I feel bitter, I am carrying resentment, or I watched internet pornography last weekend. You know, if we're not confessing our sins, they stay in the dark, and then they tend to grow. So that's an essential component, that we're always trying to be encouraging people to be confessing their sins on a regular basis. And then also just dealing with the losses, which are many during this time period. You know, having children leave is a loss.
Uh-huh.
You know, all of our kids now have moved on, and there is just, we still feel the loss of not having them as part of our lives when we lose our parents. One of my dear friends from high school just lost his twin brother last week. So these things mount, and if we don't give ourselves time to process, if we don't give ourselves time to grieve and to really wrestle with the disappointment that we might face in our lives, then it's very easy to blame it on the other person and to just think, well, if I just get out of this situation, then life will be better. But of course, no matter where you go, there you are, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, just listening, Dorothy, to what you're saying there, I mean, today is this kind of secular love fest, you know, Valentine's Day and all the rest of it. And it's a million miles away from this sort of lived reality that you're talking about, which is about the brokenness of human beings within marriage and, mm-hmm. and trying to help each other, you know, over the winning line of getting to heaven. Is this something which young people can even understand? Is it something maybe they should understand? Or is it just something that life just teaches you as you go through?
Yes, I think it's probably the latter. You know, when somebody's 25 or 26 and awash in all the love hormones, the feel-good hormones, I don't think that they even want to consider what it might be like to have their spouse have a brain aneurysm at age 50 or, you know, to discover that they have cancer at 45. That's just not in their bandwidth to consider that. And when we honestly, you know, when we promise to love each other during our marital ceremony, we have no idea what we're saying yes to. We don't.
That's true.
Just because
that's true.
We can't predict the future. So what we have to fall back on is the fact that we made a covenant before our family and friends and before God, and that He will resource us to hold to that covenant. And I really do believe that.
I think that's such an interesting word, Dorothy, that you use there, covenant. And it is absolutely key to understanding what a Christian marriage is. And suddenly it opens it out into a whole realm, which is the old covenant, the new covenant, the whole element of salvation and salvation history. And mm-hmm. our marriages are part of that.
Yes. I think that that's a beautiful way to say it.
Well, I was actually riffing on Fulton Sheen again because he told a story once about a woman who was considering leaving her husband, a middle-aged couple, and she went away and prayed. He told her to go and pray about it, and she came back and she said, I'm going to stay with him. And the reason she said she was going to stay with him is because she recognized that her fidelity to her marital vows had a greater implication for everybody and everything in the universe, and that she didn't want that part of her responsibility upended and turned towards something which wasn't the truth or wasn't good, which was a very interesting way to look at it.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that we first, you know, I do want to just give the caveat that I think that there are times when divorce is necessary. You know, if there's been unrepentant infidelity and if there has been physical or sexual abuse in a marriage, like there are specific reasons when I think that, you know, divorce may be the option that people take. But when it's chosen without those sort of extenuating circumstances that I think are biblical, people fail to realize how a divorce impacts not just their kids. They often think about that, but they don't realize how it impacts the entire community.
Yes.
We had three sets of friends when I was writing this book whose marriages all fell apart. They had all been married for more than 25 years. They all had children. They were all Christians. And there is a way in which when you see someone's marriage fall apart like that, it causes us to feel like, oh my gosh, like, am I vulnerable to that too? And that can be a good thing because then that can make us think about, okay, well, where do I need to shore things up? But it can also, you know, raise the possibility of, well, gee, maybe that's an option. So I think that without that kind of an awareness of the decisions that we make as part of a Christian community affect everybody, it can cause a real ripple effect.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think it has a knock-on effect on so many people's lives. But let's try and move it to a more positive aspect.
if Dorothy, if you know, in your workshops, in your retreats, I mean, you must also have come across the kind of tools that people can use in their marriage to make it happier, to bolster it, to increase its longevity, to help those people become better, happier spouses. I know we've only got a few moments, but can you give us some of the ideas that you would throw out there that say, look, try this, or make sure this is a key component?
Yes, I would say definitely being part of a vibrant, diverse faith community is really important, because no matter how amazing you are, and really even if you have a very strong, very solid marriage, we really need to be part of communities, because there are going to be seasons when we need help, when we need people to speak the truth to us, when we need people to pray to us. So we always are saying to people, you've got to be part of a community. That's something that's really, really key for anybody. Reaching out for help when you know that something's amiss, and that could just be that you're not communicating well, that you're stuck in the same conflict. But I think that one of the key indicators for when a marriage falls apart is that people waited too long to ask for help. So
really?
We are constantly just encouraging people, when you're having trouble, don't wait too long. You know, it's not a sign of weakness to ask for help. It's actually a sign of strength and maturity. And then I would say just really figuring out that sense of, in the last chapter of the book, I talk about telos, which is essentially having a vision for your future and having clarity with regard to how you're going to get there and who you're going to go with. Right. So it's like moving toward a specific goal or a destination with other people. And that sense of telos is very organic and it's very unique for each individual couple. But we need that. We need a sense of calling. We need a sense of, Lord, where are you taking us? Where do you want us to go? How can we best follow you? And how can we best serve other people? That can be both very unifying and very healing, because oftentimes in the process of serving other people, the Lord comes in and brings us healing, which we need. And then finally, I would say, just continue to grow. My husband and I did a marriage workshop a couple of years ago. During the lunch break, I was sitting with the inarguably the oldest couple in the room. They were in their 80s. Mm-hmm. And I found out that it was actually their 50th anniversary weekend that weekend. And so I asked them, you know, why on earth did you come here, given that you probably could be teaching this workshop? And the man just said, you know, when I heard about the workshop, I looked at my wife and I said, let's go, because there's always something for us to learn. And I just thought, you know, it brought tears to my eyes, because I thought, that's who I want to be when I'm in my 80s. I want to see that there's still more for me to learn, that there's still ways for me to grow, and there's still ways for me to figure out how to love my spouse better.
That's beautifully put, Dorothy. And also, I mean, you're reminding me where we started, which is you remind us that the best kept secret in Christian marriage is that the love matures like good wine. It gets better as the years go on. And if only you stick around long enough, you might have a chance to taste that wonderful good wine. Dorothy, tell people where they can find out more about where to get your books, but and also your other works, but also where they could get help if somebody's listening to this. Thinks, yeah, my marriage needs help. Where could they go? What are the resources out there?
Well, the resources, I'm sorry to say that I don't have a list in front of me, because they're different from region to region. There's certainly, I know that there's a Catholic resource, and I'm blanking on the name of it for married couples.
I think it's called Retrovail.
Yes, I think that that's correct. So that's definitely a good resource. Asking friends or for other people for references for good counselors, because you want to have somebody who really is in your corner and understands what you're all about. And then in terms of connecting with me on my website, which is Dorothy Greco, GrecoWith1C.com, there's a portal where you can email me and you could find all of my books and previous articles there, and as well as socials if anybody there likes to connect that way.
And you're also quite a distinguished photojournalist, I've been discovering, Dorothy.
Yes, that was my first career. I started that when I was 23, so it's almost been 40 years.
I was looking at some of it. It looks absolutely fascinating. You've won awards for it as well. So you're a woman of many, many talents.
Well, when you pick careers that don't pay well, you have to wear many hats.
Tell me about it. Well, listen, Dorothy, I hope you and your husband have a wonderful Valentine's Day, but not just Valentine's Day. I hope for the rest of the year that your love grows under the light of the Holy Spirit. And I wish to thank you very much for coming on and giving us a salutary lesson that love matures, but only in the light of the gospel. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Dorothy.
Thank you. It's been delightful.
So, Dorothy Littell Greco, quite a woman and quite a book, I think. She's written other books about marriage, making marriage beautiful. Why not? These books are important. Anybody who is feeling difficulties in their marriage or the struggle of having to love their spouse and just to love another human being and to be constantly faithful to that covenant that Dorothy mentioned. There are resources out there. There are lots of ways in which your marriage can be helped and you can be helped to grow in holiness in your marriage, which is what it is all about. So I don't know whether that helps read out. Read, that was that a little bit too much of a shock to you about marriage and the realities of marriage?
I think that was for people who are a little bit further along than me, Kevin.
Yes, but we're going to further you along even more. I don't know what's happening with you and Pam. We'll find out more about that, I'm sure, in due course. But we have got a Catholic dating agency coming up just after the Divine Mercy. And, I know you're a shy person, Reed. So what I might do is try to pretend that I'm you and see if we can get some, inside information into how we can move you along in that dating world, that snake pit, which is Catholic dating.
It's a website, right?
It is. And if you don't mind, I've already entered some of your details on it.
I was going to say who
pops up. I don't want to make Pam jealous. I don't know what happened on the phone there, but you never know. Maybe you found it. Maybe Doris phoned in and it's you and Pam all the way to the altar.
If it's a website, maybe we can convince them to route some of the additional matches my way,
Yeah, I mean, well, there's any endless possibilities. But
put the algorithm to pop me up on more people's page.
There are endless possibilities, Reed, when this woman comes in just after our Divine Mercy. But before then, we will all be coming together for prayer. And don't forget, you can be part of that. You can text us on 251-928-2111. And if you want a spouse, if you want to find the person, the man, the woman of your dreams, why not pray for it today? 251-928-2111. Or if you want to phone in and pray for your spouse, 888-928-0881. Today is a day to pray for your spouses and pray that both you and your loved one can make it to heaven. That's what it's all about. It's not about the roses and the chocolates. Okay, so, I'm enjoying the music today, Reed. I must say it's all very thematic.
Yep, we got the love music queued up.
You and Mike must have been so loved up when you were preparing all this music. You're both like delirious teenagers in a chocolate factory.
It's like an 80s middle school dance, it sounds like.
Enough about my early days. So when we come back, we'll be doing the Divine Mercy and we'll be praying for everything and anything. So it doesn't have to be Valentine's related. We also pray for you if you're in need in terms of sickness, in terms of jobs, in terms of anything else that's on your mind. And remember, you can be part of this show. So stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.